Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hello, I'm Johnny Owen, and this is the Best 11 podcast from TalkSport. Mark Webster and I ask our guests 11 questions all about their love of football, from their earliest memories of the game to how their matchday rituals have changed over the years. And at the end, they'll tell us their best 11, a team made up of anyone who's ever played for their club, along with a manager of their choice. Will they go four at the back with two sit-in, or will they pack the team with attacking talent? We'll find out very soon. Our guest this week is a man who's become one of Britain's most loved artists. With his unique style and insight into working-class life, he's become hugely popular and successful. He's also my personal favourite, and his stuff adorns the walls of my house. It is, of course, Sheffield boy Pete McKee. Pete, welcome to your best 11. Can you start by telling us who you support and why?
My team is Sheffield Wednesday, and I support them because my big brothers did, and therefore are carrying on the family tradition through thick and thin, and thin and thinner and thinner.
It is funny when you get a father or a brother who says you have to support a football team. There's not much there's not many people who can get out of that. Really,
it should be the rules.
It's pretty damning. Then that's your team, isn't it?
Well, this is it. I think everybody should be supporting the team they were born, the city or town. And I don't like this. I come from, Worksop, but I'm a Man U fan. I'm not having that. They should be supporting Worksop Town, quite frankly, in my view. I mean, I supported Wednesday when we were at bottom at third division. So, you know, I was not glory hunting at that time. And it wasn't kind of, I was made to follow Wednesday. It was just a tradition. I saw my brothers kicking off out of the house on a Saturday afternoon and coming back utterly miserable, but three or four pints to the better. So it seemed like a good thing to carry on.
You thought, that's the team for me.
That's right. I just one day this could be me.
Yeah. Well, it'd be like a cold winter night, and Chip Pan were on the go in kitchen, and my dad had been there cooking up because my mum had passed away by then. My brother had come in through the door and he'd go, "Our football is terrible," and sit down. And that were it. And that was just basically the ritual for every Saturday in winter.
The old consolation chip pans.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Reminds me of the there's a sketch by Monty Python there where the guy comes in and
Barnsley United.
That's
isn't
it, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Can you tell us your early memories of football, Pete?
Yeah, well, it's like a kind of almost like a fever dream, really, when you look back on their what it's like to follow football in lower divisions and stuff. But it's kind of it's like running around back of the stands with your mate because the terrible football's so bad, and your big brother's in the stand watching the game, and you and your mate are running around the bike because you can't be bothered. And it's also the smell of Hamlet cigars.
Yes. Because, sophisticated.
Yeah, I know, this is it. Well, my big brother worked in steelworks, and when you worked in steelworks and working night shifts, you're a bit more flush, you know, you've got a bit of cash to spend. So he'd be in South Stand, which is posh end, and occasionally I'd be taken there, and the cigars were obviously distributed out between him and his mates, and that was a distinct smell and aroma of watching football for me. And so that was another one. And just, I think, just catching buses and waiting and coldness. all the memories
the
I had about football. Yeah.
Were you much of a player as a kid?
I wanted to be a goalkeeper. And I wanted to be a goalkeeper because I was fat. And it seemed like the only option to play football was to be at net, because you didn't have to run around so much. So I had a brief dalliance with being a football goalkeeper in junior school. And I think I lasted 3 games, and the first game was 1-0, and that was quite exciting.
Yeah.
We'd lost 1-0. And then the next one was 5-0, and the other one was 7-0. And then by the half time of the next game, I was a substitute, and I never saw another game again.
Wow. Wow, you flew like a comet there. You shone brightly but briefly, didn't you?
Well, yeah, the defining moment in my football career was actually getting hold of the ball in the box after a corner and kicking as hard as I could out and hitting one of my own players and going back into the net.
Yeah, you know luck's not on your
His
side, then.
That's it. kick it in. Yeah, I still played football, obviously, on backfield with my mates, but that was the one and only chance of playing for a proper team was that school team.
Oh, bless. Could you remember your first game that you went to, Pete?
No, I can't. And that's it, because it was such a blur of just, like I say, rain and coldness and misery and boringness of watching football. because you can't. The atmosphere weren't there when you're walking up. You know, if you were like supported a big side that were successful, and you'd have that glory of knocking over a big team or he's put 5 past you. But when you've got Shrewsbury on a Tuesday night or something like that, and it turns out 0-0, or you lose 1-0, and they scored in the first 20 minutes, and all you're doing is kicking the ball in there. It's hard to get excited by it, but you're just absolutely happy that you're there because your brothers have taken you and you've been invited into this. But the actual spectacle of football wasn't actually the thing, the overriding thing. I think it was just I was grateful to get out of house, quite frankly. And have my brothers actually recognise me, because one of them, Arian, he's 7 years older than me, and he's a fanatical Wednesdayite, obviously. And then our Stuart, we were 15 years older. So I was like the chore.
They babysat you then, didn't they, really?
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
Forced upon them.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't think they were actually relishing that prospect. When my dad said, right, take our Pete at football.
I can remember being in Cardiff as a kid with my mother, and like it was in those days, a few extended family, you know what I mean, sort of like an uncle, a few cousins. And I was only 7, I remember, and Wales were playing that day.
Yeah.
And we're all walking around Cardiff. My father suddenly announces, right, he's going to nip to a pub to watch the match. And all the men were going to go with them, and the women were obviously going to carry on shopping. This was the 70s. And it was brilliant because my older brother, who was 7 years older than me, was 14. And my father went, I'll probably take Chris, because, you know, I can give him pop and crisp. And I'm there going, can I go?
The crossover.
And then he's gone, you'll have to stay. And I can remember just looking, and I was looking at these 10 women who were obviously going to go shopping. And the men were going to go to a pub to watch football. Can you imagine?
And your brother's looking back at you. Flicking the Vicks.
As if to say, you're right. And I can just remember going, I'm pleased. And I can't take your son, sorry. But so your brother's taking you, Pete, is a wonderful thing. Yeah. God bless them.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, whether they liked it or not, they had to. And that was fine. And they're sort of kind of... Arian, the 7 years difference one, he was the one that mainly took me to matches, because his best mate and my best brother and my best mate, well, they were brothers in sort of thing. So it was this sort of symbiotic sort of union. So me and Roger, we would run around back at stands while they were watching football sort of thing. Fantastic. And so that was like my first introduction of to the etiquette of football. And then my eldest brother, Stuart, I'd be the one I'd be squeezed into the corner of a boozer and told to sit quiet and wait for 2.5 hours while they're getting pre-leathered.
Well, it's a rites of passage, I think that's called.
It is, absolutely. To me, it's brilliant. It enriched my life tremendously.
Exactly. And they'd bribe you, wouldn't they? They'd go, if you sit quiet, you're going to have pop or nuts or crisps. And you'd be rigid new. And then if you'd start getting a twitchy after 20 minutes, they go, I've told you, I'm sorry. Yeah. And you sit back there.
Get a little food parcel sent over to you every now and then. As a special treat. Now, I know what you mean about how the games blur when you're a kid, but I'd be amazed if you can't vividly see your favourite player as a kid. So that's one thing that we did latch onto, I think, when we were young.
Yes. Well, because of the old football in malarkey and being in goalkeeper, wanting to be a goalkeeper, Chris Turner was sort of my...
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Very good keeper.
Yeah, and well, he was like famous because obviously he took Arsenal to about five replays in the FA Cup because he played a blinder. And so he was one. But then obviously, if you're wanting like the starlet player of the time, for us, it was Terry Curran.
Yes.
And he was our like George Best sort of Maradona type player. He had the perm, he had the tash, and he had a bit of flair and a bit of tenacity about him. So he was like the glamour boy for Sheffield Wednesday back in those days, for sure.
Had a great nickname. The Curran.
Yeah.
The Curran, really?
Yes, he's the Curran. In Forest, yeah. Because he went from Forest, interesting enough. Clough let him go, and he went to Sheffield Wednesday, and he did great there. But, Forest let him go, and he played, because the idea was that him and Martin O'Neill were two very different players. Now, John Robertson on the one wing, who was very attack minded, but Martin O'Neill was able to defend, whereas Terry was another attacker.
And you had to fit the Clough way, otherwise, regardless of how good you were, didn't you?
So it shocked a lot of Forest fans that he let him go.
Right,
but he was a hero Wednesday, as you say.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, then he went to the other side, went to the dark side, and played for United for a bit as well.
Well, did you? Was there a lot of that going on? Did they
not really? No, I don't think so.
No,
I don't think so. I think it's never the twain should meet, really, isn't it? Normally, in those sort of things, it's rare that you get a player from United or Wednesday swapping over.
No, so
well, Mrs. Curran was delighted. You know, he's got a new job, but she hasn't got to pack up all the crockery.
Well, this is the thing, isn't it? Yeah, of course. Yeah. There is that one. There's a plus size for somebody.
Can I ask you about your? I mean, you've alluded to it. You were taken by your brothers, but do you in your late teens? What were your match day rituals when you used to go down to Hillsborough?
Well, I had a sort of it was a mate who was older than me on the estate, and he was his uncle worked on the turnstiles.
Brilliant.
And so I'd go with him, and we'd get into an old.
I bet you did.
Yeah, so we get a bus at Low Edges, which is an estate next to where I live, Batemore. And that bus would take you all the way through into town and then back out into Hillsborough. So it was like an hour bus ride or so. And that would, it would be like 12 o'clock, we'd be on that. And then by 1 o'clock, we'd be in the stands when it first opened up. And you just wait and wait and wait on the cop. It's for the game to start.
Fantastic.
So it was just like the pride was to be there first, practically, on waiting on the crush barriers, waiting for it, swinging on them, getting self-entertained, reading the programme. And the very de rigueur thing at that time was to have your scarf tied around your wrist.
Of course it was. Was it a Rollers fan or a football fan?
Being very careful that you didn't bump into a fan of an opposing team who would take them as trophies, wouldn't they?
Exactly,
do you mean?
Right.
That was the thing. That, well, yeah, my brother actually warned me of that. That's the funny thing. Yeah, I remember him saying that. Hide your scarf, someone's going to nick it off you. So, yeah, that put me with fear of God.
I went to Bristol and my mate went, hide your scarf, they love your scarves. We were like, oh, okay. Do you know what I mean?
So, you buy a scarf and then it can't be seen. We'll touch on this obviously in a little while anyway, but at this point, were you putting pen to paper as a teenager? Had you started kind of down the road of sketching and illustration and art?
Yeah, I was drawing. When I was like, it was the only thing at school that I got any praise for, so I just thought that I better keep concentrate on that one, the old drawing malarkey. So from an early age, even in infant school, I thought I'll draw as much as I can, but I never had had any like kind of drawing paper in house, so which will probably take us on to the next question, so I'll keep that one for later. But yeah, so I was drawing quite a bit at the time. And then I ended up drawing football fanzine cartoons, which actually was my first ever paid job.
Oh, fantastic.
Was drawing for the View from the East Bank, and it morphed into several different things throughout its age, like Spitting Feathers and Out of the Blue and stuff like that. But I stayed current while ever the editors dropped out. I just kept drawing cartoons because it got me 50 quid every game.
Don't knock it.
And what is it like for you to go to a game now, Pete? What are your match day rituals now?
Match day rituals, me and my son Charlie, we identify a cafe that we want to try out and have a full English or something like that. We have something to eat, and then we'll try and get into the bar that's at the ground itself. The Wednesday Tap, it's called, but it always gets like snided out quite quickly. So we try and get in there, and then I'll have my alcohol-free beers, and Charlie will have a few pints. And we meet my big brothers. We sit together with Aaron and our Stuart, and we will have a sweepstake on the attendance, £1 each.
Wow. And,
yeah, I know.
Bragging rights, that, isn't it? Bragging rights,
though. Oh, man, yeah. So we can walk out with like £5 in his back pockets. To look at.
It's a thrill of the win, though, isn't it?
That's
like
all
that.
It's
about. It absolutely, we look forward to that, like on the 70th minute when they announce attendance. We've got so much to look forward to.
Yeah. Sometimes you need that in a game, don't you? Do you know what I mean?
Those. Yeah, absolutely.
And across the years, then, have you managed to collect some mementos, memorabilia, souvenirs that you still cherish to this day?
Yeah, well, that's going back to the previous question. But before I get into that one, I've got like a couple of bottles of beers that are from certain matches, obviously, like the Rumbelows Cup final. They produced a beer for that. And so I bought one of those bottles back in the day, unopened, obviously, pristine.
Of course.
And the same with the Steel City Derby, which was a momentous day at Wembley.
Yes.
And it sort of, that was when the trend where, I guess, FA Cup semis was started played at Wembley, because Arsenal and Tottenham got Wembley, and Wednesday United were in uproar that we ended up getting some other kind of provincial ground to play at, and we protested, and we got Wembley as well. I think from there on in, the semis were played at Wembley after that.
Oh, that's right, of course. Yeah, that would make sense.
I remember that very well. It's interesting that just to talk about your art as well. Football is a big part of your art, Pete, isn't it? You've drawn photographs of the Wednesday team, but also all football, and some wonderful stuff about just sort of like kids with their dog playing on that patch of grass between the tower blocks.
Yeah, that's right. It's all about the terrace culture, really, when I sort of... do my paintings when it comes to football. And so, as we were talking about the sweets and stuff, I've actually got a painting called Halftime Sweets, and it was just basically me and my big brother, the painting is, and all these empty seats around him, and it's just giving a kid basically enough sweets to last until half time, so keep them quiet while game's on. Because, you know, you take a kid to football at age 7 or 8, you're just wasting your time. You've got to get there when they're about 12 or 13 and they've got a real passion for it and really want to get involved and watch game rather than watch clouds or houses in background.
there is another wonderful painting that we could try and get on social media called Casuals, where you've got that early 80s sort of look. It's brilliantly observed, isn't it? And you do that wonderfully, like terrace culture, you get it off to a tee.
Yeah, well, the casual thing's a really interesting movement, isn't it, in a sense? It wasn't normally fashion movements are about music, but casual movement was nothing. It was about football, and you can't even pinpoint a band that would be a casual band in a sense. It could have been David Bowie, it could have been the Jam. Really matter. That it was the clubs, the teams, and where you went.
Yeah.
And so that was a great. That's what I think is quite wonderful about that as a fashion movement, was it wasn't directed by pop stars on Top of the Pops. It was directed by a group of fans, liberally taking Italian sportswear from shops when you went on. So
by fair means or foul, suppose we could say. You mentioned, you touched on it earlier on there. I mean, I'm going to assume you don't wander around football matches saying, "Don't move, I must sketch you."
No.
But so tell us about what's your modus operandi then? Because as you said earlier on, you didn't have the materials. So I take it you do now, and you've got a system that you work for doing your football stuff.
Well, this is it. Well, when we're talking back with the drawing materials and their football memorabilia, one of the memorabilia I've got is a Santos Wednesday v Santos program.
Wow.
Pele's team came to Hillsborough. They came twice, and on one of those occasions, there was a program produced. Well, the program produced for both of them, and Arian was an avid program collector. And that was his prized possession, was this particular program. But me as a seven-year-old kid, I wouldn't appreciate in this as an item of such treasure. And all I saw was Pele holding this sort of cup on his head, and it was this round circle, and I drew a face on it. And obviously, Arian was absolutely livid and beside himself. I destroyed his one and only glorious memory of Santos and Pele and seeing them on the cup. But then on my 50th
birthday... That's an original McKee. That's worth 40 grand now. But
well, exactly.
On my 50th birthday, he gave it to me framed up.
Oh, nice.
So that was really sweet, yeah.
Oh, that's brilliant.
So that's one of my treasures. That's in my studio, pride of place. But my sort of daily routine or whatever is I just troll my memories.
Yeah.
And a lot of my work is basically heavily steeped on me growing up on a council estate. And it, the beauty of that is it's a shared experience for so many people. So when I'm sort of painting kids waiting on the cop for the game to start, or I'm painting whatever football casuals or whatever, people can relate to it, and that's what it's all about. It's the relatability. So definitely, when I'm coming up with new work, it's just basically I just have to sit back and try and remember, crank my memory banks up.
you have got a real gift for this, Pete. I have to say. I went to the exhibition you did about a 6 weeks holiday, which was fantastic amazingly well attended. I mean, queues around the block for it. He'd set up a space which was commemorative of what the 6 week holidays we all remember as kids. And I'm walking around and he set up a proper mid-70s living room. And it's amazing. And there's a crowd of people all stood there, and I'm there because there's a red effusion box there, and there's the painting on the wall you remember.
Lots of clashes of patterns.
And
I'm
assuming. You know what he's got going? Yeah. I'll never forget this as long as I live. This is great art. He's got playing on a loop the start of Pink Panther.
Oh, yeah.
And of course, it's just a bit, and I can do it now. The Rinky Dink Panther, and it's as plain as he knows that he's the one and truly
original.
Panther, pink panther from head to toe. And we all sing it, a group of men and women. Oh, I swear to you. And we all look at each other and burst out laughing. And that's what Pete does. It's absolute genius. He finds those moments that are communal moments we all remember and does it brilliantly. So bless you for that, Pete. I'll never forget it.
Plus, of course, you must love the start of the Pink Panther, because that animation is absolutely up your alley, Pete, isn't it?
That was it. As a kid, I was just waiting for all those little nuggets of animation that were on the 70s TV at the time, you know. And it used to be maybe a little bit of Disney, 7 minute ones on a Saturday afternoon. And then obviously the Warner Brothers ones, which were absolutely brilliant, you know, Wile E. Coyote and Foghorn Leghorn and all those. They were shown regular. And you don't get those now, unfortunately.
No. Because it was only three channels as well. If you showed cartoons, you'd get millions of people watching because you were kids. And it was a treat, wasn't it? That's a good question for you both. Do you know who the Pink Panther cartoon was based on? He was based on a famous British actor.
I think I do.
Who?
George Sanders.
Is it Peter Sellers?
No, not far
David
off.
Niven.
David Niven. That's right, yeah. The walk. It's the 2 foot shuffle.
Too thin for George Sanders. Yes. Niven.
Very upright. Yeah. That kind of perfect English gentleman.
Ah, lovely. Pink Panther. Nice one.
Top man. So, Pete, I was going to ask you, you've drawn it many, many times. What's your favourite ever kit?
Oh, it's Buckter. 1970s Buckter. It's the one that Terry Curran, Mel Sterling wore. It's bold blue and white stripes, so it's practically these three blue stripes down the front of the chest. It goes all the way around. Nice tight blue shorts and white socks. But it was a classic three stripes sort of frontage, rather than fancy messing about now with like kind of disjointed bits and bobs. It's that need, isn't it, to create a new kit, to create a new set of people to buy it each season. And so your history gets destroyed quite quickly now. Every season there's a new abstract version of how to make a stripe look like a stripe,
They revisit it, of course. What they realise is that they perhaps
there's a template, isn't there?
Yeah, exactly. And they kind of perhaps put certain shirts out of their misery a bit too quickly. Was it a collared shirt, that one?
It was a collared one, yeah, it was. So that's always a nice thing. Another favourite Wednesday shirt for me was the 1960s one, which was basically like Ipswich Town's. It's a blue chest and white sleeve. Yeah.
Oh, and, yes, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, and I like that one because my brother Irene handed me that down. That was one of my hand-me-downs, were his top. So I have an affection for that, even though obviously they did dismiss completely with the stripes. It's just there as my little kind of thing that I got, this recognition from my brother that I existed.
I just want to join the dots here because it's a lovely story that we had Richard Hawley on a few weeks back, Pete.
I love
this story. It's a bit like it's a bit of pop culture. But you and Richard lived together, shared a flat long before you were both famous, didn't you?
That's right. Yeah, me and Richard. Yeah, we were on Hawley Street. Yeah, I remember one morning he never really roads any earlier than 3 in the afternoon.
I remember Bob Morgan at 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
He's always lived like a, he always lived like a rock star. You said this, didn't he?
He did, yeah, that's right, yeah. And so one morning, I'm just sat there. Well, one afternoon, should I say, I was sat in the kitchen. And he walks in his underpants and his guitar and sits down and plays me this song they just made up. So that were a nice kind of introduction that he were on his way with his music. But
and he said the same. He said a wonderful story about you as well. He said, so I said to him, you were lived with Pete McKee. He said, you were great, Pete, always doodling. So even then, Pete's always writing and he's playing the guitar. It's a wonderful image, though, isn't it? Both young lads.
Sounds like the Left Bank in Paris, doesn't it? Yeah. You know, in the 60s, this does.
I just love it. You know what I mean?
I once I took this girl back to the flat. They don't get any worse than that. But she went in and looked at Kitty and walked straight back out again.
It's a chance of Hawley walking in his underpants.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got a tune for you.
Yeah. There were pots piled up everywhere. I think the kitchen floor were 4 inches thick in like grease and muck and stuff like that. So, yeah.
Definitely Reed Ghosh.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Yeah. Brilliant stories. Brilliant stories. Pete, could you tell us, have you got a team that's not Wednesday that you've got a soft spot for?
Well, this is... The thing is that I don't really take any interest in football outside of Sheffield Wednesday. I can't get passionate about watching Match of the Day or a live game of football on telly. But the one team that caught my passion or Pete was Ireland, the Ireland national squad.
Right.
When Jack Charlton took them over and they had that run in the World Cup and it was just magical.
Yeah.
And I'm a big fan of Jack Charlton's anyway, because obviously he took Wednesday.
He
set Wednesday on the path to greatness before everything else. You know, we had a period, an Alcyon period in my lifetime, which I'll take. And he was the first architect of that. And it's just, I love passion and character and stories. And Ireland was full of that. And so I've always got a soft spot for Republic of Ireland squad.
Yeah, it was great to watch from outside, wasn't it? You know, for an Ireland fan, of course, but it was so much fun to enjoy them enjoying themselves so much.
Yeah, that 1990 World Cup where they got to the quarterfinal and the way they did it as well, it was a terrific. I mean, England had a great tournament, and that's what made the tournament really interesting. Was England were great and Ireland
on the go at the same time. Yeah,
absolutely fantastic. Yeah.
This is the Best 11 podcast from Talk Sport.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Right, Pete, we're going to take you through the final question now. This is the one where we ask you for your best 11. Are you doing club or country?
I'm doing a bit of everything. Is that all right?
You can do whatever you want. 11, it's your best 11, Pete.
Right, okay. Well, at first, I was trying to work out what goalkeeper I wanted, and I didn't know whether it should be Billy the Fish or Pat Jennings. So I went for Pat Jennings.
Pat Jennings.
Big Pat Jennings.
Big Pat.
Yeah, gotcha. That's it. I mean, these are some of the names that I may never have seen play football, but their names just conjure up something. And I want a dressing room that when you go in, you can smell the wood bind and the liniment and the bitter and the booze. I want that to be steaming when we go into
there
changing rooms.
There is definitely a communal bath in
cups
this
of tea,
one.
Yeah, communal bath and cups of tea half time.
Oh, exactly.
That green tea set they used to have in the 70s. Remember that thick green sort of like lime green?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, absolutely. But then I want a bit of culture. And I am going to go to Sheffield Wednesday for this. And I'm going to put Roland Nielsen as me right back. Ooh, because okay.
he was just
unstoppable. He just knew that no one was going to get past him, and when he got the ball, he put the right pass in. So he's I can't not have him in the side.
Lovely.
And then across the back, I've got Joe Jordan, Jack Charlton, and Bobby Moore.
Okay.
So I want basically, I love Joe Jordan because he didn't have any front teeth, so he obviously knew how to put himself about.
Okay.
And Jack Charlton is a little legend. I want him in my side.
Yeah.
And so I want him, and then Bobby Moore is just like my Steve McQueen of players. He's the glamour boy in that squad.
He did that. You couldn't have had a better poster boy for that 66 team, could you really? And you know,
that's right. Yeah.
He could obnob with showbiz and look the part, couldn't he? So that.
But also exactly. drinking the blind beggar with his mates.
Oh,
as well.
he was one of them. He's East End. Don't you worry about that.
He could straddle both camps. He could. Yeah. Oh, there's a great saying about Richard Burton. He was a man that could drink with paupers and princes.
Yes.
Equally as comfortable.
Same story.
More had a touch of that about him. He was a man of the people, but he could also. With royalty,
well, it's like he even looked like Michael Caine, and it's the same story, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, someone comes, he's showbiz, but at the same time, he's high street.
I was going to just say to you, Jack Charlton, he's got a film out called Finding Jack Charlton, Pete, which I think you'll really enjoy, which is literally all about his journey with the Irish team in 88, 90 and 94.
Fantastic.
It's
absolutely.
Well worth watching. And as you say, all through it, you realise what a character Jack Charlton was.
Yeah. There's a great photograph of him in his Leeds kit and he's smoking a fag. I mean, what more do you want in life than that? That's football.
That's a great photograph. There's a scene,
how it should be.
There's a scene in the film where his wife goes, he used to tell me he didn't smoke. And then his photographic evidence, and he's there on the ciggy, isn't he, with his Leeds kit on, which is great. Do you know what I mean? Anyway, your midfield, Pete.
Brilliant.
Your midfield.
Okay, I can't leave Chris Waddle out. He was so instrumental in the Wednesday squad for us. Yep. He was brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
He was good everywhere, to be fair, Pete, so that's a fine choice.
He was.
A huge favourite there, isn't he, Wednesday? Yeah. People love him at Wednesday, don't they?
They do, yeah. He a godlike character. He says, is this one, he said, I'd interviewed him once, and he said he could hear the when he got the ball and he ran down the wing, you could hear the seats flap up when everybody stood up to watch him run down the wing.
Yeah.
And I think that's absolutely magical when you've got that.
Yeah.
Not built like Chris a classical winger, though, one would argue.
No, he wasn't, no, because he got this sort of stoop to him as well, hadn't he? But
he was
really fast.
Yeah.
I know quite a good story about him. Do you remember there was an advert made about 25 years ago called The Three Lions about a pub? And it had all loads of great England players in it. So it had Jack Charlton, it Bobby Charlton, as if they were playing for a pub team.
Gotcha, yeah.
And then Bobby Robson turns up at the end and he gives the chat and they pick Peter Beardsley up on the way and Brian Robson plays and Stuart Pearce. So it's like an amalgamation of all the great England players and they play in a pub league and they run out. Anyway, I knew one of the lads who was filming that and they were saying that of all the players, Chris Waddle was still the one. He said there was very little difference between him then and when he was playing.
Really?
He said everything we asked him to do, he could do the same almost as he did when he was playing. He was one of those very apparently Ian Rush was very similar. Ian Rush was playing five-a-side football with his mates in his late 50s and 60s and he was still scoring like 10 goals.
Well, he always looked like he had something in the tank, Waddle, didn't he? In his dotage
but
as well.
That's a lovely choice, Pete. So who else have you got?
I've got another Wednesday player.
Yes.
John Sheridan.
Oh yes.
But Cluffy didn't like him and gave him to us like Curran. And he was an absolute a beauty on the ball, so cultured. The passes he played, he just split defences, him and Waddle together. It was just a dream. And also, he was hard and he liked to pint.
Yeah, okay. So the triumvirate then, is it exactly? Yeah,
it is. Yeah, yeah. He'd run the entire length of the pitch just to get into a melee. If one of the players were being like challenged by another, he'd be the first in there to help him out and stuff. And you want that. I want my side to be full of passion and to grit, but also a little bit of flair as well.
Brilliant.
You need to win a game. Never yes. mind kicking them out of the park.
Yes.
We've got two more in midfield, have you, Pete?
Two more.
Yes, Billy Bremner.
All right. Okay. Ooh.
Okay, yeah, so you've got your actual, the original enforcer.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I want to make sure that when a team plays against my side, they know about it. They walk off that pitch knowing they're at the game.
There was a great saying that they used to shout in the crowd. If it was a match that wasn't going anywhere, somebody would try to, come on, Leeds, get blood on your boots.
Yes.
Lying in there, you know what I mean? Come on, get stuck in, get some blood on your boots. Amazing.
Yeah.
And Billy Bremner, it's a great shout out because Billy was a fantastic enforcer, but could play a bit as well, could go forward.
That was the thing about it.
Had everything.
That's right, yeah. Yeah. Well, my next winger is George Best.
Oh, of course, yeah. Georgie.
Well, very nice.
I mean, I would love to have been able to see him play.
Yeah.
At his best. Absolutely. You know, to me, just an archetypal brilliant footballer, but a flawed genius, shall we say.
Yeah.
Isn't that something that we all kind of relate to when we're looking at sports people and stuff like that?
Is this someone you've captured, flaws. Pete? I imagine you've drawn George Best, haven't you?
No, I haven't. No. The one image that I overridingly love of George Best is actually the wedding present album, George Best.
Yeah.
That photograph of him on the front cover of that is just glorious.
Yeah.
I just love that. And so I would have George Best in. And then I was getting a little bit stuck when it came to strikers. I wouldn't want to put David Hurst in, but I've had too many Wednesday players. So I ended up with Jimmy Greaves and Malcolm McDonald.
Oh, hey. Interesting combination.
Exactly.
Jimmy Greaves
missed out on 66, but he made Pete McKee's best 11.
Fantastic.
So.
And
well,
also,
that's why.
Also, my old man, I always thought, you know, loved his football. We'd talk long into the night about football. He'd always say to me, the greatest goal scorer I ever seen, Sam, was Jimmy Greaves.
Yeah.
And he wouldn't even skip a beat saying it. He'd just go, what a goal scorer. And that World Cup, ironically, there was a good documentary on about him the other day, me and you were talking about it. It's weird that that's kind of defined him now, that he didn't play in a final when all the other stuff he did was fantastic.
His whole career was incredible. And he came to West Ham, it was the legendary deal. It's Martin Peters plus £225,000, swap deal from Tottenham, and West Ham got Jimmy Greaves at the back end of his career. And it was a wonderful thing to see him in that shirt, but it was probably a bit of a disaster because him and Bobby Moore, best drinking buddies at the best of times, and now you put them in the same training ground together.
There's a wonderful story about this, is how much of a natural goal scorer he is, that somebody was saying about him. He goes to AC Milan, doesn't he?
Yes.
And he's dreadfully homesick. I mean, he just wants to come home straight away. But he can't stop scoring. And he's got to the point where he's going on the pitch and he says to somebody, I don't want to score him. I'm going to try not to score. And he finds himself almost sleepwalking into positions, going, I'm putting the ball in the net.
I only scored again.
Yeah, literally. And he's coming off going, I just can't help but find the position for the ball. And I just thought to myself, that's a wonderful story.
That was why they were apparently tap-ins.
Yes.
It's because he knew exactly where to
be. Exactly where to go. It was just in him that he was just an innate footballer. And then Super Mac.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Again, it's stretching back to that liminal smelling changing room and Woodbines and Best Bitter.
Yeah.
And those sideboards as well.
Yeah, he'd have sideboards.
And the sideboards. Yeah. Exactly.
No teeth and a great set of sideies. Yes.
And I always thought, you see, growing up, because obviously he was so synonymous with Newcastle, he was a Geordie, but he wasn't. He was a London boy.
And very well spoken.
Yeah.
As well. Slightly posh.
Yeah.
Which did not go
with that face. No. Yeah, well, this is it. Yeah, that's a new one on me. I assumed he was like, you know,
a Geordie.
Born and bred. Geordie, yeah.
Because Frank Clark, who is a born and bred Geordie, told me a great story. He said, nothing summed Malcolm up better than this. He said, we were going back from Newcastle to London. He said, we'd always get the train back, such a journey. He said, and if we were really lucky, even in those days, they'd fly us back every now and then. This is in the 70s. But this one day, they've got a coach for us. and everybody's kind of heart sinks, you know, when they said that we played somewhere in London, drawn 0-0, and we got this coach journey. And in those days, before motorways, really, he said we got like 7 hours on a bus.
Oh, yeah.
But of course, Malcolm doesn't. He somebody picks him up in an Alfa Romeo Spider,
oh, of course,
and drives him off. And he went, nothing summed Malcolm up better than that. London boy, off he goes in his sports car. When we get on the bus,
it's
to
a girl
Newcastle.
In a mini dress and kinky boots.
Yeah,
isn't
literally,
it?
Literally. And there's Frank, so I go, I couldn't believe it, man. If girl comes on the corner, picks Malcolm up, and off he goes. We've got to go back to Newcastle, you know. So, yeah, I love that image of him, Supermark. It's a great shout. 1970s, sideboards and a solid pro up front.
Now, we need a gaffer off of you. Have you got a... I'm wondering if you're going to go player manager or not here. Because centre-half...
Yeah.
You've got your man, haven't you, Charlton? But have you got another manager?
Yeah. Of course, it's Cluffy, isn't it? It's got to be.
Okay.
Oh, same as last week. We're copying it. So Vicky McClure went, Brian Clough. No, I know what you're saying. I mean, if you're talking about characters in the game, it's got to be Brian Clough, isn't it?
And he gave
you two
players.
Control all these, hasn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, obviously, he might not play Sheridan, but...
That's true.
Yeah, Curran and Sheridan, yeah.
He sells one of the players out of Pete McKee's team. That doesn't seem to work quite well.
Now, I do know that you have drawn Cluffy, and I can say this, because he drew him for the stuff we did around I Believe Miracles, and he drew him brilliantly. Sold so many, and he's got him on cups and t-shirts. You did a fantastic job of that, Pete. Didn't you? Was he great to draw?
He was, yeah, because he's it's not just his face, his personality erupts from him in a sense, and they're the best people you can draw if they've got their physicality is a caricature already, then you know you're onto a winner. I used to draw caricatures at parties and stuff like that when I was younger, obviously, in my early days of drawing. So I'd get wedding receptions and stuff. And there'd be some people that were really easy because they sort of shone. And others, you just could not draw them to save your life. And you'd have to say, I'm sorry, hold my hand up after 20 minutes of trying to draw this person's face.
Yeah.
But Cluffy was one of those that you go, you can get him quite quickly because he's the whole thing, he's the real deal.
Yeah,
you do the okay Clough used to do the ding with a hand.
Yeah,
Pete did that, and also he did a fantastic one where he did the shape of the forest badge. You know that those squiggly lines that represent the Trent in the badge and the tree, only with Clough's head coming out of it.
Oh, beautiful stuff. And speaking of you turning your hand to your art, obviously I'm gonna guess being locked down keeps you pretty busy, but we need to see it. So when's that likely to happen?
Yes, well, I've got a little exhibition set up for the Millennium Gallery in Sheffield, which is our big kind of provincial gallery there. But it's only on for a weekend, and it's in December. So you can get tickets for that, and it's a freebie. You don't have to pay, but it's just to basically because of all the COVID and numbers. So you can do that, but... Once that's over and done and dusted, we're going to actually put it out online as well so everybody else can go and see it remotely on the computers or whatever. And it's 8 new paintings. And what I've done is I've actually changed my style for this. Ooh. I've got a very, very distinctive style for my artwork. But like a crazy fool, I've gone and changed it completely and tried something new. So it's just me testing the water, really, and see what people think to this new style. The actual subject matter is still the same. It's just the approach is different.
Oh,
so we'll
see.
And that should have actually been the beginning of the year. And I was supposed to have a show in London as well this year, but that got cancelled, obviously, because of the COVID malarkey. But we took a gamble and hope for the best that December's going to be okay and we can at least have this show in Sheffield.
Yeah, definitely.
Pete, I was just going to say quickly before we end the interview, could you possibly imagine when you were in that flat with Richard Hawley? I was in a meeting last year, and the meeting was cancelled because the guy who was the head of Universal was off to one of your exhibitions. I think it was the one in the East End.
Really?
And there were queues around the block. And obviously, you've become one of the most best love artists, you know, of your genre. Could you have ever imagined that? What's going on?
It's funny. I was attempting to make a living out of drawing cartoons, like obviously with the football fanzines. I also work for the Sheffield Telegraph, a local newspaper. I do the sports cartoons every week for them and do greeting card designs and gag writing and stuff like that. So I was a jobbing cartoonist, and it never kind of materialised into anything other than just kind of half a wage. And so I'd have to work to build up the other half of that wage, which was either working as a postman. And then eventually I worked at Tesco's. And while I was working at Tesco's, I I kind of had an epiphany that I needed to do something about this, otherwise I'm going nowhere fast. I got like three kids and my wife, and we live in a council house, and I thought maybe if I start painting that might do something. And I came up with this sort of style that I'm known for now. And I remember saying to this lad in Tesco's, who worked with me, I said, I'm just working on these paintings and I'm going to start flogging them soon for like 500 quid and I'm going to be leaving Tesco's in a bit. And he just laughed at me. But I just knew that what I'd come up with was going to do something more than the cartoon work did. And fortunately, touch wood, it did. And half a year later, I packed in Tesco's and I've never looked back.
Oh. Well, it's Tesco's loss, to be brutally honest.
Wonderful story.
Well, you wouldn't think that when you saw my work rate.
Brilliant. Pete, it's been an absolute
brilliant
pleasure.
Lovely talking to you. Very much indeed.
Cheers,
it's
mate.
It's been great. Good. Thanks for asking us.
The Best 11 podcast from TalkSport.
Thank you for listening to the Best 11 podcast. Don't forget, we've got new episodes out every Thursday. So join us for more football memories and another Best 11 very soon.
Step onto the legendary clay courts of Roland Garros, where the world's best players battle it out at the French Open for a chance to win a Grand Slam title. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. See the action unfold as legends fight for glory and new rivalries emerge. Daily live coverage begins Monday, May 20th, with match replays on demand so you never miss a moment. From the first serve to the final point, Roland Garros promises unforgettable moments and new chapters in tennis history. Stream now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
Flimsy stands slowing you down? Well, it's time to upgrade. Armadillo builds durable, North American-made tablet stands and kiosks. We're so confident, we offer a lifetime warranty. So, elevate your business and visit armadillo.com. That's armodillo.com and use code ACAST for 5% off. Armadillo, built to last, designed to impress.